This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Howard Barnett is our guest and his son. His son was found not guilty yesterday here in Charlottesville for plotting to bomb the Albemarle High School. What was it, Albemarle High? Two schools? Or
They said the way that charge is written, destruction of a schoolhouse by explosive device. So it was they made it so it would kind of cover all bases, I guess.
Yeah. Now, this case has certainly been in the local media. We've certainly talked about it quite a bit on this program. And I remember the first time I talked about it, I was singing the praises of the Albemarle County Police for averting a Columbine. And, boy, thank goodness, because that's how it was presented to us. And we'll talk about that. But can you sort of walk us through this story and tell us how you first got involved in this, and subsequently what happened? And we'll just sort of walk through this story, because your family, before we start, your family's really been through the ringer the past few months, hasn't it?
Absolutely. In fact, I want to just add one thing to what you said about the charges. There were two charges. They were both conspiracy. One was to commit first-degree murder. Try that on as a parent. The second was the conspiracy to use explosive device to blow up a schoolhouse. And it was pretty scary, but it didn't come right then. It was first February 1st, I believe, we were called. My wife got a call from the Albemarle County Police Department, and the first thing they said was, Mrs. Barnett, this is who we are, and your son is not in any kind of trouble, but we think he can help us out in a case we're working on, so we need you to bring him down here as soon as you can without breaking the speed limit. And a law-abiding citizen like my wife was thinking of some poor person, child maybe, sitting there in shackles and handcuffs, needing something that my son knew to help him out. And those are standard operating tactics or procedures, whatever you call, that the police use to get you down there. And then they proceeded to do an interview.
So you went down to the police station, and then how soon after you got to the police station were you separated from your child?
Immediately. It wasn't unfriendly like in that way, but he was just escorted off, and we want to talk to your parents for a little while. We didn't know it then, but he was taken to the interview room, where he sat there while they talked to us the entire time, alone in a windowless interview room with the hidden cameras for roughly 35 minutes before the two police officers that questioned him came back.
And so you're sitting by yourself in a room. You don't really know where your parents are. For all you knew, they could have gone home. You don't know where they are. Did anybody offer you anything to drink, or did they just say, sit here and we'll be here with you in a few minutes? Or
I believe their exact words were, just go on right in there, have a seat, we'll be with you shortly. And about 45 minutes later, then they decided to come in and ask some questions.
And what happened? Who came in?
Sergeant Jenkins and another officer, uniform officer.
Sykes, I believe.
Sykes?
Tim Sykes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, how long did they talk to you there?
Ooh, Dad, I'm gonna.
It was yeah, close to 45 minutes to 50 minutes. They spoke to him, and after that, they said we'll be right back in a couple of minutes, and that was another 30 minutes. I understand this is how it's done in the court. They said yes, this is what we do. We tell you to come right down, and then we don't tell you what it's for. We deceive you, and they actually said that's the way we do business here. In court, they said that. And they leave him in the room for a while. That's all part of it. I don't know what the psychology is there, but I'm sure they have their reasons. Of course, you're talking about a child who didn't have dinner, because we were getting ready to have dinner when I got home, a couple minutes before I got home. And so you have a child who hasn't eaten since 11 o'clock, and it's already 7, 8 o'clock. So by the time you get done, it's 9 o'clock. You can see I guess that's all part of what they figure.
Yeah. And clearly, that's all part of the intimidation process.
I think it's, I can't swear to it, but it's awfully convenient that it seemed to happen that way all the time with everybody.
Yeah. Were you at any point at the police station, were you scared? Or were you, that might not be the right word. Were you a little nervous? Were you a little confused? Were you?
Oh, the whole time I was just totally nervous. Didn't know what was going to happen. Didn't know what was going on. I didn't know how I was being videotaped. I didn't know if there was a mirror I didn't know about. I mean, I didn't know if they were...
I'd be scared to death. I mean, well, you know, the police says we need you to come down here right away. And then go back, go in that room. We need to talk to you.
Well, as a parent, you made the exact comment that my wife did. We were there about 15, 20 minutes being talking to, and there was small talk going on between the police officers and us in a conference room when they finally started telling us why they really had us there and talked about this plot that they suspected. And my wife says, is our son... by himself? Why, yes, he is. And my wife said, he must be terrified. Well, why does he have to be afraid of? Why should he be terrified? It sort of felt like one of those detective movies.
Yeah.
Why? What does he have to be afraid of?
Because he's a child sitting alone in a police station.
She said, if I was in a police station in a room by myself, I'd be petrified.
Yeah.
And he's 13. Yeah. So, I don't know.
We're talking with Howard Barnett and his son. His son was cleared yesterday of all charges related to the Albemarle bomb plot case, which we should call the smoke bomb plot case, and found not guilty last night in a court of law here in town. We are this is the first public extended interview with Howard and his son, and we are glad that you're here. We welcome your calls. If you have a question about this case at 977-1070, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is Charlottesville Right Now. We're talking with Howard Barnett and his son. His son was cleared yesterday, found not guilty, in an appeals trial here in our community, not guilty of plotting to do anything. George is on the phone from Fuvanna. George, thanks for the call. Go right ahead.
Yeah, hi. I hate to have to say this, but it needs saying. The idea that there's chit-chat at the police station is ridiculous. And people, I mean, the police are not going to want to hear it, but it's the truth. The police... knock on your door and say, may I come in? The answer is no. No means no. If they want you to go somewhere, you say, speak to my attorney. Look, we just had a recent example of Patsy Ramsey where the police and DA were absolutely bound and determined to send those people to jail. And now appears, maybe they didn't do it. They didn't get arrested simply because he was a reasonably experienced executive, and he knew no is no. No, you may not come in. No, you may not. And I got to tell you, it's hard, but the police are doing it to themselves. Any comments?
Yeah, it's a good point, George. And of course, it's a bit apples and oranges with JonBenet Ramsey. I mean, they had a dead child in the basement. You just got a call at dinner time, right before dinner, from the police saying, "Hey, we think your son can help us. Can you come down? Please get down here as fast as possible."
Well, you do that once. Yeah. Now that you know, George is right. Unfortunately, the common sense is you try to be a law-abiding citizen and you do what naturally you trust law enforcement.
Yeah.
But they've made it so that they've made it so you have to call an attorney.
Yeah.
I hate to say it. It hurts me to say that because that's not what my natural reaction is. But if not, if we had called an attorney, I don't think anything would have happened.
Yeah. Tell me about when you were arrested. It was out in fill me in. All I've read is that it was at school, right?
Yes, it was.
Tell us a story.
Well, I'm sitting in my study hall class, getting some homework done, and my principal, he comes up and comes to me in the class, and he says, I need you to come down and come to the office with me. I said, okay, well, whatever. So I'm in the hall. I said, well, what's this about? He said, well, I think the police wanted to talk to you. I said, what do they want to talk to me about? He said, well, about this whole case and stuff. I said, oh, okay. You know, I'm thinking, oh, they just want to talk to me again, you know, maybe use the principal's office as a place for an interview again.
Because when you left the police station that night, a few days before this, they didn't tell you you were in trouble even then, right?
Right. They actually said you're not in any trouble.
Okay. So go ahead. So you're at school and...
So I get down to the principal's office. He sits me down in his office in one of the chairs, and I'm sitting there for about 10 minutes, and then the resource officer comes in and she says, I have a warrant for your arrest.
Yeah,
I have a warrant for your arrest, and it's for conspiracy to commit murder and commit arsenal. And I just was shocked. I didn't know what to say. I just kind of looked at her, and it was just terrifying. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah. Well, you and any other human being. And so did they handcuff you in the school or outside? Or
In the school.
In the school, and then they – and were there other kids around? Did they
– Well, it was in the principal's office. Then they walked me out the front office, you know, past all the – I guess I'd call them receptionist kind of thing. And I actually saw one of my friends on the way out, and he looked at me kind of weird, and I just kind of kept walking. You know, I got a police officer and a principal right behind me. They walked me out the front door. They'd covered up my handcuffs with my jacket, walked me out the front door, put me in the police car, and the principal, he leaned into the window, and he said, you know, just do whatever they tell you. Just listen to everything. Just give them what they want to know. I thought about that, and I said, well, that didn't really do me any good before now, did it? So I just kind of went along with it. They took me to the police station, asked me a few questions to fill out some papers, you know, your name, date of birth, and all that stuff. And then we finished there, and then they took me over to Blue Ridge Juvenile Detention.
Howard, how long it was, when did you find out that your son had been arrested at school?
I was actually on the road. On my way to Florida, I got as far as Charlotte and got the call from my wife. She got the call, said, you need to pick up your son. And she said, well, he's in transit, thinking that he was on the bus home. They said, no, he's in transit, but he's on the way to the police station. She goes, I don't understand that. And they said, he's been arrested.
And the call was from who? The school?
No, that was from one of the police officers. It may have been Pistolka, but I'm not sure.
How long was it before you saw him? Your son?
Oh, not for a number of days after that, because my wife wasn't allowed to see him when she got to the police station. By the time she got there, which was only maybe tops 15 minutes, and I don't know if he'd even gotten to the police station yet, he had already been given his intake hearing, which is with no parent there, with no attorney. This is the kind of treatment they do for juveniles. And when I asked about that, they said, oh, we had somebody from the probation department here, so it didn't matter. My wife went to see him at Blue Ridge, and they wouldn't let her see him. We didn't see him till the following Sunday, till that Sunday. I think he was arrested on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Because you get 2 hours of visiting time on Wednesday.
So your son is taken away by the police in school on a Wednesday, and you're not allowed to see your son until Sunday.
Everything.
And that's right here in this community. I mean, we're not talking about Detroit or New York or something. That's Charlottesville.
Understand, everything that was told to us in 6 months till yesterday, every sentence seemed like everybody told us was due to the seriousness or the nature of these charges. In other words, this trumps everything, including your rights, is basically what they were telling you.
Yeah, and we were told as a community, shortly after this, the police came forward with this big press conference and said that they had averted a near Columbine in Albemarle. And it was huge news. And I came on the air and I said, thank God, you know, oh my goodness, boy, the police are doing so well. And we were made to believe that these kids were in a garage somewhere making bombs, they had a map of the school, and that they were minutes away from killing untold numbers of kids and teachers.
Yes, Mr. Camblos and the police department stated, I think it was one of their press conferences, that this was going to happen had they not intervened. Now, that's interesting, because then they hide behind the ages of the two juveniles to supposedly protect the Commonwealth from providing, from showing us the evidence.
Yeah.
So it was going to happen. You just have to trust us. I didn't.
And as we learned yesterday, at least in your case, there was no evidence. There was no plot.
No, they talked about what had been confiscated from one of the other child's parents' house out of a locked gun case. And the explosive devices they were talking about were
a smoke bomb.
Yeah, and some firecrackers.
Firecrackers, the kitchen matches.
Yeah, we were trying to figure out quite how many firecrackers one would have to do significant damage to a school. That's a physics problem we don't know the answer to.
It's ludicrous. I mean, it's ludicrous. Clearly, I think, and I've said this before, I think the oldest young man involved in this case has some problems and needed some help. He was, from everything that I've read and heard from folks who've been involved in this case, he was a bit of a Columbine wannabe. But the three other kids that were involved in this case, especially you, found not guilty yesterday, sort of got swept up in something that they had you know, no business in. And the police and the prosecutor's office here in Charlottesville did everything they could to engineer that.
Well, I think some of the things that indicate that things were done unnecessarily was, for instance, the arrest at school. When asked about that, the spokesman for the police said it was because of the seriousness of the crimes or seriousness of the charges. Well, the other three, as serious as they thought they were brought from home. And my son had gone voluntarily.
Yeah.
They brought him down. They never brought him in for questioning after that. And yet they felt they had to arrest him from school. I suspect that perhaps they felt that they were running out of gas on publicity on this case, and maybe they didn't have what they thought they had. And I don't think it's shameful to say, look, we overreacted, but in these times we do. But instead, and this is my theory, they took a different tack and said, hey, let's move down the food chain a little bit. We can make this look a little bigger, and they can't fight this.
Yeah.
And it is tough to fight, let me tell you.
We're going to take a break for some local news here at the bottom of the hour, a little weather. When we get back, we'll continue this discussion and talk a little bit and some more specifics about what was going on behind the scenes during the trials, and get your opinion about what may have gone wrong here. Because clearly something went wrong with the quote-unquote system. It didn't work the way it's supposed to work. And Susan, hang on with us, please, and we'll be back in just a minute. This is Charlottesville right now. We're speaking with Howard Barnett and his son. His son was found not guilty yesterday in a court of law here in Charlottesville, not guilty of plotting or conspiring to do one damn thing, not guilty. Howard, tell me, how is it? What happened that, you know, your son was found guilty in what I can only imagine for you and your wife was a terrifying trial to watch this machinery roll over your family like that and you know, your own child? How was it not guilty, you know, a few months ago, and then yesterday, or guilty a few months ago, and then yesterday not guilty? What happened?
It was, everything was different. I mean, if you saw the two trials, you would wonder if it was the same thing going on. For one thing, this time he was treated as innocent until proven, and in case he ended up not guilty. The first trial, everything about it is no one has demonstrated anything that shows that they were treated anything but guilty first. We had a separate trial scheduled. The other two somehow tactically were put into our trial. So you have three kids there, and it looks like you got a conspiracy right there. You had a bench trial instead of a jury trial. And truly, I don't feel that that was properly done. I think I had a lot of objection to how that was handled. It was, there was no chance.
We've had folks call in. We've seen letters to the editor in some of the local papers and have had some local journalists come on this program and talk about some of the concerns with the Commonwealth Attorney's Office here in Charlottesville. Jim Camblos, of course, an elected official. I'm wondering what your take is as a citizen of Albemarle County on how this case was handled by his office.
I have some real concerns. I think it's sometimes looked like it was more of a fiefdom than a county. And I think I'm all for them being a little more concerned due to the Columbine-like atmosphere, but it got way over the line, and I think it got like a runaway freight train for them, whether it was the excitement of the case that could make somebody's career. I sure hope it wasn't, but or whether it was that, maybe we haven't got enough. We better beef this up somehow and then get the kid arrested at school. I mean, why else would you arrest him at school when the other three, and you said there was only four, were already in detention? There was no risk. And so it kind of indicates that there was some reason that there was that overzealousness. As far as how they got the suspect or suspicion in the first place, they've already admitted that they used deception techniques to bring you in there. And also, remember, the first trial, which people didn't know how it was handled, it was all based or mostly based on what they called communication through the Internet, computers, messaging.
Yeah, we had heard that the kids were IMing, instant messaging back and forth, or emailing back and forth, plotting and conspiring to kill their classmates.
Right. Well, in this trial, the Commonwealth introduced no computer evidence, and in her closing statement,
in the appeal trial, yes, in the past couple of days.
Yes,
yeah.
Right. They said there was no computer evidence because they didn't use a computer to communicate. Well, that happened to coincide with the fact that we pressed for the credentials of the person who did the computer forensics, and we were never given it. So, I think that had something to do with it. And
so in the first trial, they used a lot of computer evidence to show this, and then in the appeal trial, they didn't even introduce any computer evidence.
Right. Now, there never was anything incriminating against my son, but when we asked for the computer information, we were never given it until the morning of the trial when the judge was walking in, and they tossed some stuff with a bunch of gibberish that said, and the computer forensics person typed in, says, this means this, as if, let's say it was a foreign language, hieroglyphics that were written, and somebody wrote underneath, this means this, how would you know? But judge just believed it. And anything that was said negative on any one of the three boys was labeled on all of them. And if you throw enough pasta at the wall, as they say, maybe that's what it looked like.
And that was in the first trial. In the appeal trial for your son over the past few days, of course, the jury had something very different to say. The jury saw no evidence of a conspiracy.
No. I believe they were extremely observant. I was really pleased. You know, good or bad result, I would have said the jury was very observant and was as objective as they could possibly be. And most importantly, the judge was totally fair, I felt.
Paul Petros.
Yes.
Yeah.
I could say nothing but good things. And we said that all through the trial. It was remarkable, the difference between the two trials. And I think that was as important as anything else.
Let's go to the phones, 977-1070. Susan, thank you for your patience. I really appreciate it. You're on the air.
Okay. I just wanted to say, first of all, just so people know where I'm coming from, I don't know any of these kids, and I'm also the mother of three, and I have a kid at Albemarle High School, just to lay that groundwork. But I have been really sort of horrified and very alarmed at the way all this was handled. I actually had talked to a friend of mine who does know one of the families, and she was saying all the families thought they were being really helpful when they let their children go off with the police. And, you know, they thought they were being good citizens. They didn't have anything to hide. And then that turned around and bit them. And then Alan Newsom case, I mean, the father was saying ask for a lawyer, but then apparently it's in Virginia, a child does not have to have a parent present. The parent can't ask for a lawyer. The child has to ask for one.
That's right.
And how would the child know they're supposed to ask for a lawyer? Of course, I've told my kids that. The arrest at Jewett, you know, they said they were so tactful and so secretive, and I know people there, and they said, oh, no, it wasn't. The bus drivers, when kids were coming out to get on the bus, were saying, hey, somebody was just arrested a minute ago.
When you went out front in handcuffs, were people pointing at you? Were there buses out front?
There may have been a couple of buses, but not much. But I, like I said before, I was walked out the front door through the main hallway. Anyone who was in that hallway could have seen me. I actually saw one of my friends in the office as I was being walked out.
Yeah. Susan,
well,
let me ask you this.
One of the bus drivers was telling people. And then my other horror thing there, I don't understand why somebody that has been accused of murder, and oftentimes they're pretty sure that person did commit the murder, they can get out on bond. And how can they take these kids and just lock them up with no bond?
Yeah,
you know, and I understand the post 9/11 world is very different. I told my children, you better be very careful what you say on the computer.
Absolutely.
That's written words.
Absolutely.
Be careful, and people can twist and turn anything. But at the same time, you know, I don't think the authorities should go on a witch hunt. You
yeah.
know, they have to be willing to admit if they made a mistake, and you know, go from there. And I do agree everything I've heard, and as I said, having three children, I know a lot of different people, and I also know a lot of teachers at the different schools.
Susan, thank you so much for the call. I really appreciate the call. Let's go to Howard. Howard, how could they, what she's saying about not getting out on bond, why was there no bond?
The officer who did the computer forensics on the first, when we first brought the computer in voluntarily, said in his detention hearing, which was the day after he was arrested, and this is all it took, I can't find what I think I should find on this computer, therefore I've determined that the father has deleted data. And the judge said, well, I know a parent would do a lot of things for a child they love, and computers don't delete themselves. Take them away. By charging what the charges they did, there's a numerical scoring, and if those two charges add up to over 15, then they have to detain unless the judge overrides it. And when that was said, I had no defense. There was no written data or anything. They had never even really analyzed a computer that had 24 hours and claimed they couldn't do it in a couple of weeks. So, yeah, it, basically, it's, you know, it's like a fiefdom sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying all law enforcement's bad, but I think there's some people who either are not doing what they're supposed to, or maybe it's bad management. I don't know.
Tell me what it was like in prison, in jail, when you were in jail. Because I'm sure it had to be absolutely terrifying.
Yeah,
one minute you're with your parents and you're at school and they send you off to school, and then all of a sudden, you know, the government comes in and grabs you and locks you up, and you want to see your parents and they say no. And you haven't done anything. That's what gets me. You didn't do anything.
Well, I have to say the first couple of days was definitely the worst. The first night, you know, all you can do is sit on your, what they call a bed, a cot on a piece of concrete, and stare at the wall. One night, I literally counted the bricks on one of the walls. I can't remember. I also counted the holes in one of the vents. I remember one of them was 111, the other one was 137. And it was just, you know, that. And then you look up at the light that is still on. They don't turn off the lights for you to sleep.
Oh, don't forget they were doing suicide watches every 10 minutes, so you couldn't sleep if you wanted to, is what you told me.
Well, they do suicide watches, means they come in. If you're awake, they knock on the door. If you're asleep, then they just kind of come in, look through your window.
Yeah.
And then that's basically all they do, and then you're just staring at walls, and then you do get to come out during the day.
We're gonna take a quick break. The phone number, if you have a question, 977-1070. When we get back, we'll talk about the future. What happens now? Does this young man get to go back to school? This is Charlottesville Right Now. We've been talking this hour with Howard Barnett and his son. His son found not guilty yesterday in a court of law for plotting to bomb or kill or do absolutely anything wrong. Not guilty. Howard, I have to ask you, at any point in the last few months through this hell that your family has been through, have you ever been lied to at all by either the Commonwealth Attorney's Office or anyone with the Albemarle County Police Department that you knowingly can say, I was absolutely lied to at that point?
Yes. There's a number of times. I mean, there's probably way too many to calculate out here. We usually think of around our family as the ones that really count the most, I guess. What really disturbed me was the lies when they say they have information that they don't have, incriminating information. They lied to us about saying they had incriminating computer information when I know it wasn't there, but they used it in a way with people that would get the job accomplished. And it's not so much what the lie was, but what was trying to be accomplished through that. I always thought that law enforcement was supposed to search for the truth and enforce law, but kind of make your own and work around it. You know, and I'm sure that's not the case for all law enforcement, but I don't think the end always justifies the means is what they're trying to do. The end that they want, which was arrests in this case and getting the golden prize. This sound like
an OJ case. And a lot of publicity as well.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, they were searching for lots of publicity from the very beginning.
Absolutely. And I think where the real big lie is, although it's not as much me personally, but how the public was lied to. I mean, these are, we keep our families' lives in their hands. And to be duped like this, to scare all these people, after all, I'm one parent, and we've had to live through it personally. But by the same token, look at all the other people who are just don't know what to do.
Yeah, and we do need to say, I said it in the last half hour, we do need to remind folks that we have one young man that was involved in this, the oldest one, who's now 17, who does probably need some help. He is a Columbine wannabe, and he clearly he needs some help. But the other three boys here seem to have been sort of caught up in his web, and all the while thought it was sort of a joke that many teenage boys. I sat next to a kid in geometry class when I was a kid who used to draw pictures of hanging the teacher, and nowadays he'd be thrown in prison.
That's right. They've taken a lot of the things that used to go to the principal's office away, and now it's, you know, assault and battery or whatever always goes to the authorities, and I just don't know that that's what we're trying to accomplish here.
Yeah. Now, when you were being questioned at the police station, you told, what was it, Jenkins?
Yes.
Yeah, you told her, look, it was a joke. And I don't know how many times you said that. I have the transcript, but many, many times you said, this was a joke. And at one point, and of course, they obviously never believed that, because they certainly prosecuted you to the hilt. But at one point during the interview, she tells you, well, are you ready to be arrested? You're under arrest. And what happened?
Well, that was when I'd been sitting for my last 40 minutes after I'd been talked to, and I'd been told, just wait a couple more minutes, someone will come get you. And so they come in, they say, all right, you ready? I said, yeah. I stood up. They said, you ready to go to jail? I said, huh? What? You know, just gave them, you know, a surprised stare, and they're, oh, I'm kidding.
After spending all this time saying, you can't kid about anything like this, I mean, maybe it's not as serious as people want to make it, but really, when you're spending an hour and a half telling a 13-year-old how you can't take anything for a joke, the whole thing was based on it, and then she comes in and says that, but with her, it was okay. You know, it's do as I say, not as I do, and that's the ultimate sin as a parent.
The fact that we have a person like that on the police force in this county right now makes me sick. Well, that they would take a child into a police station, scare the hell out of them, and then say, you ready to go to jail? Oh, I'm just joking with you.
Well, it's interesting. At least the good part about it is she didn't lie on the stand about the fact that they use deception tactics to do this. And when pressed by one of my counsels, they said she said, that's the way we do business around here. And I'm curious to know if that's really the way that they want to have business done around here, because I have a lot of respect for most of the people in this county, and I really hate to think that that's the word that comes from above.
Yeah. Howard, what happens now? Because I know the Albemarle County School Board has ruled that your son has been expelled for a year, but that decision was based on the fact that he was found guilty in the previous trial. Well, he was found not guilty yesterday. Where do we go from here? I'm certain everybody's waiting to hear if the school board would perhaps, can they change their mind legally? I mean,
I think the school board has a lot of leeway to do what they think is best for the school board and hopefully some way what's best for my son. So we're hoping that they're going to reconsider maybe the fact that the courts have given him a clean bill of health and perhaps let him go to Albemarle High School like he had planned for so long.
Because you would be an entering freshman at Albemarle High School this year, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And I can only imagine that you want to go back to school with your friends.
Well, yeah, obviously.
And, of course, the private schools, you've in the interim, when you've been going through this hell, they wouldn't even, most of them wouldn't even meet with you.
No, they said, look, this thing's too hot. The publicity on this thing is just too hot, and we can't go near it because even if we would want to take you, we'd be afraid there might be parents we got to concern ourselves with. And interestingly enough, my wife said, well, but he's a juvenile, remember? All the Commonwealth kept his name out. They go, yeah, right. You know, everybody knows their names. We know his name.
Yeah.
We know all the kids' names. Nothing was kept that quiet.
Yeah. We have a lot of folks out there, and I've talked to some who say, well, better safe than sorry. It is post-Columbine, and you know, it's just too bad that your son got mixed up with the wrong kids.
Well, let them be in my shoes or my son's shoes and see that. I don't think if you want to cure shoplifting, you can just put everybody in jail or cut their hand off, whatever the punishment might be in a different country. Does that solve the problem? That would be a different country. And last time I looked, the Bill of Rights had 10 amendments on it. If you start peeling them off, you don't have the United States.
Yeah. Let me ask you. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, oh, man, I don't remember what I was going to say.
That's all right. Let me ask you, is there any one thing you think you're still 13. Is there any one moment in this whole experience over the past few months that you'll just absolutely never forget? I'm sure being in jail, I'm sure being questioned by the police, or any other thing come to mind that you'll still be remembering as an old man, put it that way?
Well, I can say pretty much most of this year is going to be remembered, the entire 6 months. Honestly, I know I'll never forget that, oh, I'm kidding, at the end of that interview, as they call it.
When the police officer was joking to you about arresting you.
Right.
Yeah. Howard, thank you for coming in, and thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Sorry, that I can only imagine, you know, with a son of my own, I can only imagine how tragic this whole experience has been for your family. And you sort of, I guess it's a warning for all of us.
You really have to be careful. I hate to say it, but if you ever get a call from the police, you got to call your attorney. I hate to have to say that, but otherwise you're going to regret it because it's just too much of a chance to take. It's what times have come to unless a major change happens.
This interview will be archived in its entirety at SeaVillePodcast.com. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.